Jen Zamperali on 2FM with Leia Healthcare. Always a beat ahead. Visit leiahealthcare.ie. Leia Healthcare, looking after you always.
Now, a report on children and gambling was published earlier this month by the Institute of Public Health and Tobacco Free Research Institute, and it had some really worrying findings relating to 16-year-olds and their gambling habits. That's right. 16-year-olds. Think about that. Well, Dr. Helen McAvoy is the IPH Director of Policy and joins me now. Good morning, Doctor. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. And yourself?
Thanks for asking. Yeah, I'm not too bad. Thanks for taking the call. So let's get into it. What were some of the worrying findings in that report?
Well, our report found that around one in five 16-year-olds reported that they'd gambled for money in the last year. We looked at four main types of gambling, so using slot machines, playing cards or dice, lotteries, and then betting on sports or animals. And we found that certain forms of gambling were more likely to be associated with excessive and problem gambling, particularly like online gambling and betting on sports or animals.
Wow. Were you surprised by the findings?
I suppose I was in one sense, yeah. I mean, I think the prevalence of sort of gambling for money among 16-year-olds is about the European average. But we do know that this has increased over time. And obviously, the move from kind of land-based betting towards online has perhaps accelerated that happening over the last while. So we were keen that we would have some evidence around the experience of underage gamblers, because the government is trying to progress a gambling regulation bill, and we just felt it would be important to have that evidence as part of the considerations in that.
Do you have a theory as to why this has happened in the last while?
It's a little bit unclear. Obviously, you know, the switch to online gambling and the accessibility of that has means that you can gamble really from your phone.
Yeah.
I think the ease of the access to gambling is probably a key factor. I think we have seen increases over time in gambling marketing and advertising.
Okay.
So I think that's another area where we sort of need to think about is that a contributory factor? And also, you know, the associations now that we see with gambling with things that we do want 16-year-olds to be doing, like watching sport, playing sport, enjoying sport, and so on. So I think there's the close relationship with sports is something that I think can bring children and young people to gambling in a way that they mightn't have otherwise.
And what would you define as problem or excessive gambling? What are we talking here?
Well, the definition that we use for problem gambling was if the 16-year-old reported that they'd lied to somebody important to them about how much money they'd spent on gambling, and that they'd felt the need to bet more and more money. So this indicates they were the two indicators of problem gambling. We have measures that we can use in adult populations, but they use things like how much of your salary you spent and so on. So we have to use slightly different measures that suit the context of younger people. And in terms of excessive gambling, that was a sort of a combination really of the amount of time that they were spending gambling and also the duration. So if they were spending more than 2 hours a day, for example, on gambling activities, or they were gambling, you know, three or four times a week, that was excessive. So that really related to the amount of time that they spent.
Okay. And what was the youngest age you discovered were gambling?
Unfortunately, in this particular survey, there's only 16-year-olds in it.
Okay.
There are other surveys that look at younger children, but we actually don't have any data that we can use on under 16s at the moment in Ireland.
Do you have data that could tell us, is it more boys than girls? Do we know that?
Yes, we do. I mean, we were particularly concerned by the higher risk among boys. Mm-hmm. Even there was more gambling boys than gambling girls in the survey sample, but even when we compared the gambling boys to the gambling girls, we saw that boys were running into difficulty at a much higher rate than the girls were. So I think if you looked at the although not all 16-year-olds gambled, if we looked at those who did gamble for money, around 1 in 20 were meeting the criteria for problem gambling. And if we looked at the total group of problem gambling, around 80% of those were boys. So a lot of the teenagers who do gamble find themselves getting into difficulty, particularly the boys. So I think that was a sort of a key kind of learning piece. I mean, and we're not hugely surprised by that, because that's what we see in the adult population, where we see a concentration of gambling issues among men rather than among
yeah.
women. Certainly, we see boys and girls and men and women using different forms of gambling. The forms of gambling which are more likely to be used by boys are also the ones that are more likely to be associated with excessive and problem gambling. So particularly the online gambling and the betting on sports or animals was really concentrated in the boys. So there's, I'm very keen not to sort of, you know, always make teenage boys the problem.
Sure.
And to think about the product here that they're being, that's been marketed in the way
they've
that might be very attractive
to them. They've been marketed to. It's,
yeah,
it's
exactly.
like so accessible for them. And what difficulties can this lead to as children grow up and become adults? You said they're like one in 20 are problem gambling. Where does this go in your experience?
Well, I think what we found really is that, you know, the pattern in relation to gender and in relation to other risk factors is already in place by the time people are 16 years of age, you know. So I think that's, you know, that means we have to intervene earlier. We have to look at why gambling is attractive, appealing, accessible to young people if we're really going to try and start to solve the problems later on. I think the... you know, I think we need to look at some of the gendered messaging within some of that marketing. You know, some of those ads are pretty much an explosion of masculinity, if
mm-hmm.
you want to look at them next time
mm-hmm.
And see the messaging in that and say, is that okay? You know, so we hope the research will shed some light on the kind of the reality of underage gambling activity and, as I said, inform the content of the gambling laws, which we are hoping will be passed by the Irish government before year end.
Please God.
But not without imposition.
Yeah. Now, the gambling industry will say that they have safeguards in place already. What would you say to that from the findings of this report?
Well, I think there are safeguards in place, but it would appear that they're not working terribly well if we have 1 in 5 16-year-olds in a position to gamble for money in the last year. So whatever's happening in age verification is not being terribly effective. I think there are other things that the government needs to do, as well as kind of trusting in the activities of the gambling operators. So I think we do need to move forward and think we need a test purchasing program. That's the best way to see what's actually happening in the real world.
Helen, where are they getting the money? I mean, is there any indication as to whether this money comes from, I don't know, part-time jobs or pocket money? Or did you get any insight into that?
No, we actually don't know where they're getting the money. Interestingly, we do know that boys get more pocket money than girls, but I won't go into that right now.
No, that's a different segment altogether.
But I think, you know,
and girls get more jobs than the lads. I know from my experience in the house, anyway. So that is an interesting
yeah.
one. So there's no indication where they're getting their money from.
No, we couldn't look at that within this particular survey. But again, I think that would be a very important one to look at in the future. You know, I think obviously it's linked with the age verification. Then if you're using particular cards now, the new gambling bill is to ban the use of credit cards, cashback options and things like free bets and inducements. So I think that would be very positive, because
yeah.
I think it would be very positive in terms of the use piece, you know.
More safeguarding. Can you just
yeah.
tell me, what was the national survey? Like, how does Ireland compare to other countries in all of this? I mean, how are we doing?
I would say that the sort of prevalence of gambling and the prevalence of problem and excessive gambling was, the survey, I think, is in 32 other sort of OECD countries, including European countries. So we weren't the worst, we weren't the best, we were about the middle. I would say there was some lower rates in Spain and the Netherlands, so there's plenty of sort of room for improvement. What we didn't look at, what the survey didn't look at, because it didn't answer the question, was things like, you know, the in-game transactions, things like loot boxes, skins, other things like that on the online gaming that a lot of 16-year-old boys play in particular. So I think we're just skimming the surface, in because the types of products that are out there that are gambling or gambling-like are changing and diversifying all the time. And so there's a lot that we maybe didn't fully capture in the survey. So, I mean, in any case, I suppose, you know, we really shouldn't have any 16-year-olds with problem gambling. And I think the proportion of those who are gambling for money, who are running into difficulty, particularly boys, is something that we really need to work on. Compared, the only way that Ireland is, I suppose, distinctive from other countries is that we have far more betting on sports or animals than other countries do. So that's something I think that we need to think about in terms of Ireland and the culture and that, you know. So,
and betting on sports games and football games and taking your kid to the dogs and all that kind of stuff. Let's think about that for a second. What can parents do if they suspect their child might be gambling? Is there helplines? Is there something they can do initially?
Well, unfortunately, I think the service response is fairly limited, although I think there's been some recent investment in to try and better develop services to address people who are running into difficulty with their gambling at an earlier stage. But I think for the moment, it's really about having a conversation about the gambling. There is a proposal in the new bill to establish a gambling exclusion register, so you can, I mean, you should be excluded on the grounds of your age anyway. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if you're running into difficulty at that age, then, you know, we would like to see that people would be on a really effective exclusion register, you know, later on as well, so that they can be, you know, that the that's sort of taken away from them. But I think in relation to sort of child and adolescent mental health, you know, I think if people are running into difficulty, you know, first of all, I think it has to be a conversation between parents and their teenager. But in terms of the services, it would really be, you know, your GP in the first interest in instance, and then to child and adolescent mental health service.
And get a hold of it if you're a parent. We were talking about social media, which is different, of course, but you need to know what they're looking at. You need to know what is being sold to them. And you can only do that if you're monitoring their phone. And sometimes you can feel like it's an intrusion of privacy, but it really has to be done, you know, especially when these safeguards aren't enough.
The Cyber Kids website has a lot of really good information for parents around trying to support teenagers and trying to sort of try and get prevent them getting into too much trouble online. The government is progressing an online media and safety regulation process through the new Media Commission, and that has made some commitment to look at gambling as part of what could be regulated in the future. So we have some good regulation coming down the line, I hope. It's just a matter of trying to get that passed the legislative process.
And until that happens, it's not just there, it's the culture of it, it's very prevalent in our culture. I just got a text in saying I was fairly shocked when my fifth class boy came home from primary school and needed €2 to bet on a horse. They were doing it in school, this texter says. We moved from San Francisco, and I can tell you, if that was going on at our school, there would be an emergency meeting with the PTA. We rolled with it, but I guess it just shows how prevalent it is here. That's what we're told, the culture of gambling. Oh, it's just a couple of quid here. You know, it's sport. It's, you know, it's a bit different. We need to look at ourselves and the culture of gambling in this country for sure. What do you hope comes out of this report, Helen? What do you hope is going to happen?
Well, I hope when the next sitting of the Justice Committee discuss the Gambling Regulation Bill that they take into account the experience of underage gamblers in deciding on passing this legislation and what's in that legislation. I think that's really important. I'd love to see that the bill intends to develop a Gambling Regulatory Authority of Ireland, and I'd love to see that there was a child-focused element in the work of the Regulatory Authority of Ireland to protect children and to hear their voices and to understand the experience they have in their sort of interaction with gambling products and marketing. I think that would be, I'd really like to see that. I'd like to see some research in terms of better understanding the way in which the age verification process is working or not working, and the way in which you know, teenagers are understanding the products that are being put forward to them. I suppose,
sure,
you know, there's two things. There's a product that is designed in some way to kind of tempt you in, keep you betting, and then there's on the other side, there's a kind of a developmentally immature teenage brain that's wired for risk taking, that's very keen to impress their peers, that doesn't really understand cause and effect in the same way as somebody who's 25. So I think, you know, the combination of those two things can be quite a dangerous mix. So,
and maybe to all the grannies out there, you know, maybe think twice before you put that scratch card in the birthday card. Maybe just have a little think.
I think it's, as you said, it's in the culture. It's quite normalized and it's seen as harmless. And I don't think people can necessarily, I don't think every child that gets a scratch card is going to end up, you know, gambling for money for life. But I think, you know, maybe a little bit more awareness that not all children and teenagers are able to understand that the odds are always against them. The gambling operator always wins. You know, they're seeing a lot of perhaps their favorite footballers, or you know, with betting advertising on their shirts and so on. So I think, you know, they're surrounded in a way by quite a lot of marketing and sponsorship and messaging that.
They haven't a hope. We have to mind them. We have to be completely aware.
Exactly.
I think just all of us being aware. And I thank you for coming on and going through this report. And thank you so much for coming on and speaking with us this morning. And the best of luck with everything. Hopefully we'll talk again soon.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Helen. There we go. That was Dr. Helen McAvoy, the Institute of Public Health Director of Policy, speaking to us there about the recently published Children. Think about that for a sec. Children and Gambling report, and it's really worrying finding.
Jem Zamparelli on 2FM with Leia Healthcare. Always a beat ahead. Visit leiahealthcare.ie. Leia Healthcare, looking after you always.